There today, three of which are oral cases. The first case on our calendar is James Edward Cook II versus Hitomi Aramitsu. Did I pronounce that correctly? And counsel will each have 15 minutes for oral argument, followed by, well, 15 minutes each for your oral argument, and appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And counsel can proceed when you're ready. If you could please identify yourself and the party you represent when you begin, that would be extremely helpful for us. And you can move the podium up and down as necessary.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Valerie Arnold, and I am here on behalf of the appellant, Hitomi Aramitsu. Also present today on behalf of the appellant is my co-counsel, Michaela Wattenbarger. The issues before the court today involve the intersection of family law with international law. The principal issues relate to that intersection of family law and international law with respect to the exercise of subject matter jurisdiction over child custody and with respect to the exercise or the affording comity to international Hague and family court determinations. In addition, the issues involved contempt and issues related to substantive and procedural issues in the dissolution matter. I would like to start today by talking about the important issue of the intersection and interplay of state law and international law with respect to subject matter jurisdiction. The court is familiar with the facts of the Aramitsu Cook matter as
counsel,
this-
Counsel, why and how is that in front of this court? This court has already ruled that the Minnesota state courts have subject matter jurisdiction. So why are we even still talking about subject matter jurisdiction?
Thank you, Your Honor. That is the essence of this appeal. The reason why we are here talking about subject matter jurisdiction is because the facts that were in existence at the time of the Aramitsu 1 decision, if you will, are substantially and materially different, not only with respect to the underlying facts upon which the district court relied in exercising subject matter jurisdiction, but also with respect to the procedural posture and the legal implications. To be specific, Your Honor, we are not here to challenge whether or not Hennepin County District Court has home state jurisdiction.
Then why doesn't the court have subject matter jurisdiction if that law clearly provides for home state jurisdiction?
Your Honor, the response to that involves the intersection of international and family law. The UCCJEA does not stand in isolation. The UCCJEA in international custody cases must be interpreted and applied in a way that's consistent with international law.
But at the time of the first Cook appeal, the April 2017 order denying mother's motion for amended findings took into account the Japanese modification order. So I'm having trouble understanding why that issue hasn't already been taken into consideration and resolved on the basis that by the first appeal determining that the home state jurisdiction applies nonetheless.
Yeah. Your Honor, the prior decision of the district court when it asserted subject matter jurisdiction was based upon its determination that Minnesota was the home state of the children. It also noted that the court, which it did, the court order from Japan, which it did recognize and enforce, had found that Minnesota was also the place of habitual residence.
And that wasn't changed by the modification order.
Correct, Your Honor.
So that still stands.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
And the district court, in exercising jurisdiction, further found that it was unlikely that Japan would exercise jurisdiction over child custody, and that as the home state, it would exercise jurisdiction in this matter.
But under the statute, home state residence is a separate grounds for subject matter jurisdiction.
It is a separate ground, yes, Your Honor. What has happened that makes...
So the modification order doesn't affect that home state analysis. It is basically what the court concluded.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's where understanding how the UCCJEA functions in achieving its goals and how the Hague Convention functions in achieving its goals is critical to understanding why we believe that there is legal error in the court's decision not to defer to Japan once the Supreme Court of Japan issued its final decision not to return the children under the Hague Convention.
So, thank you. That's helpful. So you're not arguing that the Minnesota court doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction. You're arguing that under principles of comity, the court should have recognized the Japanese modification order and subsequent orders.
Under the doctrine of comity and also by virtue of the supremacy clause. If I may explain this overview that I believe is critical in understanding this intersection of state and federal or international law. Presumably, when the UCCJEA was made into law, it was not intended to violate or contradict federal or international law. The Hague Convention also is intended as the supreme law of the land because it's superior to state court based upon the Constitution, is intended to be recognized and enforced. And when we look at the Hague Convention and when we look at the UCCJEA, in a sense, they operate in a very, very similar fashion. They are both laws that use civil remedies to deter child abduction, to promote cooperation between the courts. The Hague Convention in its preamble talks about its two objectives, to secure the prompt return of children wrongfully removed or retained in any contracting state. And
so couldn't we determine that, in fact, the Japanese modification order is entirely inconsistent with the Hague Convention? I mean, the Hague Convention is about returning children wrongfully abducted, which is what we have in this case. And so wasn't the district court at liberty to say, you know what, the Japanese courts, the modification order is entirely inconsistent with the Hague Convention. And so therefore, under the Hague Convention, we're in fact required to ignore the Japanese modification order.
Okay. Respectfully, Your Honor, I believe the accurate response to that question is no, and there's two reasons why. One, we talk about the prompt return as being an objective of the Hague Convention. That is one of the objectives. The second one, and the equal objective, so there's no statement in the Hague Convention that says one objective is more important than the other. If we look at Article 1B, to ensure the rights of custody and of access under the law of one of the contracting states are effectively respected in the other contracting states. So the goals are twofold. The UCCJEA has a similar mindset and goal, using subject matter jurisdiction to accomplish the goals, just in the same way that the Hague Convention is quasi-jurisdictional, in that the custody determination is going to be made in the place of habitual residence unless, and that's critical in this case, the children are not ordered to be returned.
But the children were ordered to be returned initially, and the determination was that Minnesota is the place of habitual residence, and that hasn't changed. So I'm having trouble understanding how the district court erred in finding that the second order was contrary to the purposes of the Hague Convention.
Certainly.
And you mentioned the Supremacy Clause, but the federal precedent interpreting the Hague Convention, and the Hague Convention is an international treaty, and so federal courts are, the federal court interpretation of the Hague Convention is authoritative. Those decisions are consistent in that a U.S. court may decline to extend comity to a foreign court's determination if it contravenes the convention's fundamental premises or objectives. So I guess I understand your Supremacy Clause argument, but I don't think the Supremacy Clause requires this Minnesota to recognize a foreign court's determination where it contravenes the convention's fundamental premises or objectives.
Okay. To answer your question, again, there are two parts. So if I could finish the first part of the analysis and then go to the second question about whether or not the court properly declined to afford comity, recognition under the doctrine of comity. UCCJEA, home state jurisdiction, not the same as habitual residence, but it's the primary basis for subject matter jurisdiction over child custody. Just like the affirmative defenses in the Hague Convention, the UCCJEA says we're going to first go to home state jurisdiction, but once we determine that there's home state, just like the Hague Convention says, once we determine there is habitual residence, the court has discretion to decline. Home state jurisdiction, we can decline if there is a more convenient forum, for example. Under the Hague Convention, the court can refuse to return if there is one of the affirmative defenses available: grave risk of harm, mature preference of a child, etc. So I just want to make clear that there is a parallel in terms of how the UCCJEA and how the Hague Convention functions. This is critical because when we look at that initial determination, it's important to recognize that if the home state declines jurisdiction in favor of a more convenient forum, we don't ignore the jurisdiction of the more convenient forum, saying, oh, but the home state's supposed to be first. Similarly, with the habitual residence determination, if the country that under the Hague Convention, and the country is Japan, that has the right to determine whether an affirmative defense applies, it's not Hennepin County District Court that gets to tell the Japanese Supreme Court what to do. So
but
in
the,
this case...
But the Minnesota court gets to decide whether to extend comity to that decision.
In this case, Your Honor, the Supreme Court of Japan said that an Article 13B defense applies. We're not going to return the children. As such, this jurisdictional stay that we see in the UCCJEA also appears in the Hague Convention in Article 16. With the decision not to return the children, Article 16 allows subject matter jurisdiction. And it's important to understand that while the U.S. has the UCCJEA, other countries don't. And so it's critical to enforce and interpret and apply the Hague Convention in a way that's consistent with the other member partners. When we get to the fundamental decision that the court has pointed out, the fundamental question, well, can't we just solve this problem? Minnesota's going to go ahead, ignore what the Japanese Supreme Court is saying and doing, ignore the fact that there's another child custody proceeding, and because we're home state and habitual residents, we're going to go ahead and exercise jurisdiction and just ignore what the Supreme Court of Japan did. That would be akin to the Japanese district court ignoring a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. So at issue here are very significant issues. And the error of the district court in this case is to substitute its judgment for the judgment of the court in Japan. It did so by making assumptions about the trial court record, which it didn't have before it. And ironically, the key underlying facts for the Japanese Supreme Court...
Can I interrupt for just one second? Mm-hmm. Whose fault is it that the Japanese court record was not made available? Wasn't that your client could have submitted the Japanese court record? I mean, isn't that right?
Your Honor, courts are bound to base decisions upon the record before them. That doesn't mean the court making findings that are not supported by the record are clearly erroneous. And in addition, the findings that were there in Aramitsu 1, the court affirmed registration recognition of that 2016 Osaka court order that had the findings about the mature preference of the children, for example. And so the record that was there, the record that was recognized and enforced by the district court initially, was suddenly out the window, and the court is making conclusory statements about the entire judicial system of Japan based on nothing. And that is the error here, that there has to be a priority over habitual residence, and if this court didn't decide to vacate the decision, just as it did when respondent came in and motioned for the court to reconsider jurisdiction based upon the Hague decision, when Ms. Aramitsu did that, the court declined to do so. We are saying that the court should have changed its decision based upon the new orders, and in the alternative, it was legal error to refuse to decline jurisdiction. Thank you.
Ms. Arnold, this is a very complicated and interesting case, as you know, and important case, and so I appreciate your helpful discussion of the law here. I do have one more question for you an issue that we didn't touch on, and that is the issue of the contempt order, the July 2019 contempt order and bench warrant. You argue that the notice wasn't adequate, but what prejudice, if any, was there to your client from the lack of notice? I don't see an argument in your brief that your client was actually prejudiced by that lack of notice, and so if maybe you could point me to whether you are, or you could clarify for me whether you're arguing that your client was somehow prejudiced by that lack of notice.
Thank you for that opportunity. Appellant was prejudiced by that order because she was denied an opportunity to raise any defenses. When we look at the trial court record in this matter, the issue was of contempt was just brought up by opposing counsel. We've got this issue of noncompliance. We'd like to have a contempt order. If you can give us a contempt order, that's going to help the prosecutor have personal jurisdiction so we can pursue this matter criminally.
Is there any question that she would have come and appeared if, or is there any evidence to suggest she would have come and appeared if she had noticed that contempt was an issue? In other words, at the last contempt proceeding, the prior contempt proceeding, she didn't appear, and in your brief, you suggest that that mother made clear her position that she was abiding by the Japanese orders and did not intend to return to the U.S. So I guess you know, it doesn't appear to me that mother would have actually participated had she been given notice, okay, based on your brief.
She wasn't given notice, so I cannot speculate as to what she would or wouldn't do. That isn't part of the record in this matter.
But I can say, your brief says that she did not intend to return to the United States.
Correct.
Page 53 in the discussion of the contempt issue.
However, there are other defenses to contempt. One defense in this imprisonment that's likely to induce compliance. Interestingly, opposing counsel argues in speaking to the court about the contempt that would probably be the last thing that would inspire her to return with the children, talking about this contempt process. So there are other grounds upon which it is not valid.
And so what defenses, I'm sorry, it's not, I mean, you made an argument that, a legal argument in your brief, but what other defenses would mother have personally made if she had an opportunity to appear? Would she argue that she wasn't able to comply?
She certainly would argue that she wasn't able to comply. That was one of the reasons that was presented to the court in terms of why she could not come to the hearing, because she is taking care of four children, and for her to come here would have been difficult not only financially but in terms of the situation of the children. In addition, Your Honor, we have a fundamental problem that we're holding someone in contempt who is compliant with an order from the Supreme Court of the country in which she lives. And so the question, the position that this court has...
Wasn't that issue, though, already addressed in the last contempt round? At the Mahaty hearing? Prior to the Mahaty hearing.
But, Your Honor, I would say no, because there has been a subsequent fundamental change of circumstances with respect to the Supreme Court of Japan deciding not to return the children. That, we would argue, divests the court of subject matter jurisdiction to make a custody determination. It's also, it seems to be a fundamental error for the court to be enforcing by contempt orders that have been vacated by or rendered unenforceable by virtue of subsequent decisions. And so that's a fundamental problem too. I don't think that the power of contempt is intended to use imprisonment when it knows that it won't induce compliance, and when the responding party is caught between conflicting and contradictory orders. So I just don't believe that the lack of notice, if she had an opportunity to respond, she would have raised those challenges, just as she is here today, raising these challenges through counsel.
So, and you just mentioned that you're raising those legal challenges here. So would there be, what purpose would it serve to, again, raise those legal challenges below if we decide those legal challenges here? Is it necessary to remand to address those legal arguments below if we can address them here?
Your Honor, if the court finds that the court erred by failing to decline jurisdiction in favor of the Japanese court that has jurisdiction by virtue of its own laws and application of Article 16 of the Hague Convention. I mean, if the court is to rule in our favor, the problem is solved, because then we no longer have competing custody proceedings. We have achieved the goals of the UCCJEA and the Hague Convention of avoiding concurrent proceedings and respecting custody cases. If the court declines to recognize the jurisdiction of the Japanese court and the need to respect that court's orders, then this mess is going to continue. And we would still argue that contempt would not be an appropriate or effective remedy to address these issues.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. My name is Sean Ranke, and I am here representing Mr. James Cook II, who is the father respondent in this matter. As I noted to the court in briefing, I appear in lieu of Ms. Taylor, who could not attend due to a death in her family. So I thank the court for its graciousness in allowing me to argue this morning. Respondent asks this court to uphold and affirm the decision of the district court. As Your Honors touched on in your questioning, there is no basis for us to be here again on the issue of jurisdiction. This court found in the Cook 1 decision that Minnesota has home state jurisdiction under the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Enforcement Act. When you look at 518D subdivision, or .202, excuse me, you would find that the UCCJEA also calls for continuing and exclusive jurisdiction once home state has been established. Your Honors asked a question of appellant regarding the other methods of establishing jurisdiction under the UCCJEA, and appellant argued that Minnesota should defer to Japan because it is a more convenient forum. Your Honor, that provisions are discretionary. That is not a mandatory finding. Once the court establishes home state jurisdiction, it's here. Appellant is able to make an argument that Japan may be a more convenient forum, but the district court is not bound to find that it is. And given the facts in this case and reading appellant's brief and analyzing the factors of inconvenient forum, I would note that mother argues that Japan is more convenient because she has refused to return the children. She moved to Japan with the children 1,669 days ago. They have not been back since. My client last saw the children in August 2015, was the last time he spoke to any of his four children. And despite multiple orders arguing or commanding the return of these children to the United States, mother has refused. And she's proud of her refusal in her brief. And she's now asking the court to award her and reward her for her refusal. She's saying, I haven't complied. Japan has now become the more convenient forum. Let's move it over here. Despite the fact that Minnesota is the proper forum in which to make a decision on the custody and parenting time of these children.
Well, mother points to Article 16 of the Hague Convention. Our counsel argued just a few minutes ago that Article 16 of the Hague Convention would support extension of comity in this case, do you have a response to that argument?
I do, absolutely, Your Honor. We would agree that under the Supremacy Clause, the Hague Convention is precedential and binding upon this court. However, as the court alluded to in its questioning, the purpose of the Hague Convention, and I'm taking this from appellant's brief and the Hague Convention itself, is to protect children internationally from the harmful effects of their wrongful removal or retention and to establish procedures to ensure their prompt return to the state of their habitual residence. That is the goal of the Hague Convention, is to return the children to the state of their habitual residence. The law on this matter lets the district court review those Hague Convention orders when it makes that decision of whether or not to apply comity. And if that order from the other jurisdiction does not conform with those purposes, the return of the state of their habitual residence, the district court does not need to extend comity in that case. Here, as Your Honor alluded to earlier in questioning, or indicated and appellant acknowledged, there is no dispute that Minnesota is these children's habitual residence.
But given that the Japanese court, the most recent Japanese court decision determines that the children need not be returned to the United States, is Japan the more appropriate forum to determine the custody issues?
It is not, Your Honor. And the reason being is that the children still had the majority of their lives here in the United States. They were not infants when they moved. These were older children who moved. There's still information here. They still have family here. Their father still lives here. Grandparents are here. They're heavily invested in these children's lives. There's still information and processes that can be done. The courts have ways of investigating and doing best interest analyses that can consider the Japanese environment.
So, counsel, how about the older set of twins who are now, in fact, 17? And the courts of the state of Minnesota in any normal custody case, I believe, would ask the children, certainly of that age, what are their preferences? So how do we deal with that part?
Your Honor, we deal with that part as we look at 518.117. We look at the desires of the preference of the children as being one factor. And in my experience, even a child of 17, yes, their preference is going to perhaps be weighed more heavily on the court, but at the end of the day, it's still one of 12 factors. And under 518.117, we can't use that one factor to the exclusion of the rest. We have to look at all 12 of those things in making a custody analysis. So while I agree that the court may indeed look at what the preferences are of these children, we still have everything else that we need to look into. And we can do all of that here in Minnesota. We could have done all of that in a custody evaluation. This was initially referred to Hennepin County Court Services for a custody evaluation, which could not move forward because the children were not returned. Had that been done, we would have had information on those best interest factors and how that would have applied. But that being said, appellant isn't challenging the best interest determination in this case. They're challenging whether or not the court had the ability to make that, and this court does.
Did the district court properly conclude that that the modification order by the Japanese court is contrary to the purposes of the Hague Convention?
It did, Your Honor.
Mother argues otherwise.
In our opinion, the district court did properly conclude that, and for the reasons I stated earlier, because the primary purpose of the Hague Convention is to return the children to the state of their habitual residence and to prevent the children from the harmful effects of their wrongful removal. These children were removed from the United States by agreement of the parties on a temporary basis. They were not returned. The Japanese court has now said, you know, we're just going to reward mother for her failure to comply with our initial orders because they've been here long enough that we're just going to do this. We cannot allow our courts and our mother should not be rewarded for her refusal to comply with the multitude of orders stemming from the district court here. She should not be rewarded for her refusal to comply with the return order that was in effect for a significant period of time before being rescinded. And when the district court gets an order, it needs to look at the goals of the Hague Convention, needs to look at the effect that that's going to have and the purpose of everything and make that analysis. And we believe that it reached the right conclusion here. Yes.
Did Mother receive sufficient notice of that the court could address the issue of contempt?
She did.
In the later, at you know, after the trial, at the trial, and in the later orders?
We would argue, Your Honor, that she very much did receive sufficient notice. As the court noted earlier, that there were two hearings. There was an initial hearing, and then there was the Mahady hearing on the contempt piece. And from every order from the district court stemming from that point on, Mother was instructed to return the children to the United States, return the children to Minnesota. That contempt piece, that provision was ongoing. There was a stay on the return conditions, I'm sorry, on the purge conditions for a while, so as to help spur compliance. And with every order, that put Mom on notice that this was an ongoing issue, that this was not something that was done, that this was continual, that this was ongoing. She did receive notice.
What about the specific statute and rule that she cites Rule 309.03 of General Practice and Minnesota Statute 588.04, were those complied with for purposes of the most recent contempt order?
Your Honor, for purposes of the most recent contempt order, I would note that some of those provisions require things like personal service. Due to the appellant's actions, it has made it impossible to comply fully with some of those things. So I would concede that potentially there was not strict 100% compliance, but that was not due to any fault of the respondent in this or father. This was the fault of appellant's own actions, making herself unavailable, refusing to cooperate in these proceedings. She did not even show up at trial.
Can you address the issue of prejudice? Mother argues that she was prejudiced because she didn't have an opportunity to present defenses.
Mother's alleged defense here this morning, Your Honor, was that she could not comply because of financial concerns, and that would have been her defense. As the court can see in the record, and I apologize, I don't have the exact site, but Mr. Cook has had plane tickets for these children to come home since he initiated this action, and that's been noted to been made aware of the district court. The financial concern is not there. There have been tickets. My understanding is that they are on standby, and he can call Delta, and they will be made available within a period of time. So there is no prejudice. The defense that she would have put forward that this is a financial burden is not there. The defense that this is somehow she's excused from compliance because of a Japanese order, I don't see a basis for that under our Minnesota law. Also, as this court is aware, if a district court order is appealed, unless there is a specific order staying that district court order, it remains in effect during the pendency of an appeal. Some others arguing here that she doesn't have to comply because she was simply continuing trying to get a different result. But to my knowledge, there was never an order anywhere staying those earlier decisions. So at the very least, there was a period of time where Mother refused all orders, Japanese, American, and she has continued to demonstrate her abject refusal to follow any decision of any court unless it suits her. So Mother was not prejudiced. She indicated she wouldn't come to a hearing even if she would have received personal service of that. Her defenses are of limited merit as they would have failed for purposes I've already stated. No, Mother does not proceed on an argument that she was prejudiced by a failure to comply.
Okay, thank you.
I would just conclude with our request that the court affirm the order of the district court. Thank you, Your Honors. Unless the court has any further questions.
No further questions. Thank you for your argument. Any rebuttal, Ms. Arnold?
Thank you, Your Honor. (Clears throat) Respondent would have this court believe that the exceptions in the Hague Convention don't matter. Respondent, however, has failed to cite any authority to say they don't matter. The interpretation that respondent is putting forth would result in a very problematic precedent.
Respondent argued that extending comedy, recognizing extending comedy to the or recent Japanese orders would basically reward mother for failing to comply with the initial Japanese order. And it's my understanding from the record that there were some attempts to enforce that initial Japanese order in Japan, mother didn't comply with those attempts. And mother also didn't comply with the district court, Minnesota district court's order to return the children. So how would extending comity to the later Japanese orders not reward mother for disregarding the earlier orders?
Okay. First of all, I would submit that the Hague Convention isn't about rewarding mother or rewarding father. If we look at the Supreme Court decision from Japan, it talks about the children, and it talks about the affirmative defenses and why those are applicable. The reward of mother, we would submit, is not relevant to the court's analysis. It is not.
Isn't compliance with the orders relevant to the court's analysis? I mean, that's the issue, is whether, you know, it's proper to disregard a prior order and to recognize a later order where there has been a disregard of a prior order.
Sure. In terms of the decision to afford comity, whether or not mother has complied is not part of the analysis. And I would state for the record that I believe that respondent grossly misrepresents the history. In terms of this court's contempt order and the order in Japan that basically undid the obligation to return the children between February 2017 and I believe March 2017 was a very narrow window. But when we look under the doctrine of comity and the S. Vestra Petraustis case, the analysis for comity doesn't have to do with which parent is it going to reward. It says
it has to do with the purposes of the Hague Convention, and one of the purposes of the Hague Convention is to ensure the prompt return of a child. And here we had an order by the Japanese court under the Hague Convention requiring the return of the children, and those children weren't promptly returned. Excuse me.
So there's two purposes, not one. And again, in reviewing for whether to afford comity, does it misrepresent the Hague Convention, contravene fundamental principles, or fail to meet minimum standards of reasonableness? We have cited cases that are analogous to what the Japanese Supreme Court did here. They decided not to return the children based on a grave risk of harm that incorporated also the mature child defense. So it looked at the findings that were affirmed by Hennepin County District Court. It looked at the situation that the children were in Japan. It looked at the strong preferences of the older children. It looked, just like in the Ermini case, looked at the grave risk when we separate siblings.
In which cases are you referring to specifically?
The Ermini. Ermini v. Vittori case, the Custodio case is one that affirms failure to or appropriateness of not returning based upon the custodial preference. And when we look at the analysis that the Japanese Supreme Court does, it is thoughtful. It looks at the letter of the Hague Convention. It looks at the spirit of the Hague Convention. It looks at the underlying facts. The importance of consistency and respect for what our member countries do is as important as the goal of returning children. I mean, recently the U.S. Supreme Court...
So we're clear, you're suggesting that there's not a primary purpose in the Hague Convention, that the two purposes share similar merit, identical merit?
Or do you, Your Honor.
Do you concede that one is supersedes the other, is primary to the other?
I would not argue that one supersedes the other. There are Section 1, paragraphs A and B, and so there's no language to suggest that one would be more important than the other. Chief Justice Roberts, in hearing the most recent case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, the Minoski versus Taglieri oral arguments in December, he stated one of the most important guiding principles is what other countries do in Hague cases. And so when we look at the cases that were submitted to the district court here and to this Court of Appeals, not only did we cite similar cases in the U.S. under U.S. precedent, but we cited precedent from other jurisdictions around the world. And so this return at all costs, return when there's no information here about these kids. When we look at the trial record in this case, this best interest determination that was made, it is clear why there is the exception to decline based on inconvenient forum under the UCCJEA and why there is exception to decline under the affirmative defenses. And I would note, there is discretion in declining, but there is also abuse of discretion. There's a case, an Iowa case.
Okay, you're going on to a new issue now, and your time is up. So if it's cited in your brief, you can point us to it, but if not, I'll thank you very much for your argument. Is the case cited in your brief?
I don't recall. It's In Re Marriage of Servetti, it's a Iowa U.S. Supreme Court case.
Okay, we'll look at the cases in
your
brief.
Okay, thank you, Your Honors.
I appreciate the argument of both parties. Your argument was very helpful, and we will look very carefully at the issues in this case and issue our decision within the statutory time period. Thank you.